Welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 24th of April 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live at RadioAlbion.com tonight, because we have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told, Communism by the Back Door, the Freemasonic Victory of World War II, the soon-to-be-released Winston Churchill's Body Count, and the released this week Stalin Was a Freemason. The producer, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, good evening, sir. How are you?
Good evening, sir.
You doing well?
Well, been a war all week, haven't I? I'm a bit shoot.
Been busy all week, haven't you? It's a great video.
Yeah, well, yeah. Bit of a bloodbath again.
Oh, you mean with your other video, your Hitler video that you put up there?
Yeah.
Right. Yes, 22nd Hitler video and about 1,000 pagan comments on there. Yes, yeah. Yes. Do you want to let the listeners know what this Hitler video, the content from it?
Well, basically what it was like, I was just fed up with people just jumping on me saying that Hitler were a Christian and give me two or three other particular religions he was into. So I just decided to put up the video. I said, look, you know, don't bother me, just listen to the man himself. And I have an actual piece of Hitler talking, saying how he would defend Christianity, not just on paper. And, you know, we've had 14 years of all this degeneracy from, you know, the Weimar Republic, and atheists are just going to drive him out. So, you know, it was there in plain German. And I just got a wave of attack after wave after attack.
Yeah, I think it's very strange, you know, because you put the evidence out there for people, it's quite obvious, and yet it's like it goes in one ear and out the other. And there's a verse in the Bible that says that if people don't have a sufficient love for the truth, they will be sent with a delusion, a strong delusion, and they won't be able to see the truth. And I really do believe that that is the case when we see these pagans that see Hitler talking about how anti-atheism he is and how pro-Christian he is, and then they tell us, oh, that was all a lie, and he was really a pagan, he was really going to get rid of it. And, you know, the punishment fits the crime. If people aren't going to be honest about the truth to themselves, then they won't know what the truth is. But the problem with it is that they're associated with nationalism as well. So people see them, and they see the ridiculous things they're saying, and that's their punishment. But then they start talking about nationalism, and it puts people off nationalism. And it,
well, how can you be a national socialist, a claim to be a national socialist, when they're calling Hitler a liar?
Yeah, and going against, you know, a very central part of national socialism was promoting positive Christianity.
Well, this guy said at one point, he must have been lying because no politician ever tells the truth. I said, but he backed up everything he said.
Well, the other thing is, above that as well, you've also put a link to Veronica Clark's essay on Table Talks, and she's come up with a lot of new evidence which shows that Table Talks isn't worth the paper that it was written on. It wasn't Hitler's wasn't Hitler's own words. It was the people that were listening to him writing the words up the next day, and then somebody else editing that, and then Bormann editing it, and then a German copy coming out, and then a French copy coming out, and the French copy made from the German copy, and then the English copy made from the French copy. And I mean, going back to the beginning, it's not even Hitler's own words. So you can't.
Plus, one of those guys, I think it was Rhys Roper, was the guy who said that the Hitler diaries were authentic and cost somebody an absolute fortune.
Well, that's it as well. They're basing the authenticity of it on somebody who doesn't have any credibility. He has even less credibility now that she's exposed all of this. Veronica Clark is no friend to white nationalists.
I've heard all the arguments before, but you know, she's researched and told it as it is.
And this is why I say you have to be open to what the truth is. Sometimes it won't be what you want it to be, but you still have to go along with it because that's the truth. And, you know, if you're a Christian, then that should be central to your philosophy, is finding out what the truth is and sticking to it. And
writing on it, yeah.
Yeah, and use that for comfort and inspiration, knowing that you are right. You know, that's what those Christians did, the ones that were all martyred 2,000 years ago in horrific deaths. They were able to do that because they knew that they were holding to the truth. So it didn't matter what was done to them. Because they knew they were right. Well, you've also brought out another video, Dennis. Stalin was a Freemason. Excellent stuff. Do you want to tell the listeners a little bit about it? I'm sure some of them will have seen it already.
Well, this all came from just after the Burtness source of debate come crashing down, when somebody actually questioned me saying that Stalin must have been a Freemason. And obviously, I've done a lot of research about Freemasonry in two documentaries now, Communism by the Back Door, and the other one was A Secret Masonic Victory. So I've dwelled deep and quite thorough in Freemasonry. It's quite fascinating to me, to be honest, how they've kept the secrets for so long and practically taken over the world as we talk today. So when I was questioned on this, I realised that it weren't just enough just to do a documentary, because not everybody watch it. So I thought I'd do a short video explaining the strong points of why I felt he had to be.
Well, I think you've done very well. There's a lot of sources, and I think what you're putting in there is unarguable. But there was one complaint I did see in the comments. Someone was saying, oh, you're talking about Freemasons and that distracts people from the Jews. It's like the Jesuit excuse, the Jesuit conspiracy. But what they're forgetting is that the Freemasons were basically a front for the Jews.
Yeah, it was a Jewish invention.
Yeah, if you look at it, it's Jewish through and through. It's all about Solomon's Temple. It's all about Jewish magic. And when it began, the Jews didn't actually have any civil rights. So what they would do is they would get the Gentiles that were the Freemasons to advocate for what the Jews wanted until they got what they wanted through the French Revolution. We'll talk a little bit about that later on.
I suppose his 32nd degree made someone so that we was in conversation where he was disagreeing with what I was saying. And when we got to the subject of communism, he refused to talk anymore. He said, if you mention communism again, I will refuse to answer any more questions. And, well, that's the end of this. You couldn't talk anymore because, obviously, Freemasonry is obviously a bastion of communism. Always has been.
Well, this is it, isn't it? There's people that doubt that, and you've really done a good job of showing that. And there's also a lot of people that doubt whether Stalin was a Freemason. And I think you've come up with some really good evidence in this video to show that he is. Most of it centers around a statue of him. And I've got the actual notes here that you've got from the video. So we can go through the notes and we can expand upon them. And you begin by saying, here is a statue of Stalin in the Masonic pose called the Hidden Hand of the Jarbulon. Now, where did you find this statue
from?
Well,
that's the cover of a book, which I'd noticed in my research in the Secret Masonic Victory when I was doing the Ukraine. I came across, and I just saved that picture of the book cover, black and white, just thinking this is interesting.
Because there's lots of images of politicians, and they're making what appear to be Masonic signs, and it could just be the way they're standing or what have you, but to actually have a statue made of somebody making the Masonic sign, that's deliberate, isn't it? It has to be.
Well, I kind of said, there were obviously people who've been photographed with their hands in that position, that the hidden hand, Napoleon type. But the thing was, I've never seen anybody immortalized in stone pretending to be one.
That's the thing. That's the point. Because we've said it before, haven't we? You know, the people that are just making these symbols, it could just be the way that they're standing or just the way that they've been photographed. But when they're doing it all the time, or in this case, it's a statue of them, they're obviously trying to portray, trying to convey a message, aren't they? That's what he's trying to do, I think.
Yeah, You know, he's immortal in that statue, isn't he? And, I mean, to put your hand inside a coat and be made into a statue, which is then, whatever height it was, it looked a big one, it's a statement.
Well, let's have a look at let's break down what this is actually called. The Hidden Hand of the Jarbulon, which isn't the actual name that the Masons call it. It's a name that Masonic researchers have actually dubbed this, but it is a Masonic symbol that they use. And this word Jarbulon or Jarbulon, it's a composite modern Hebrew word which is allegedly used in some rituals of Royal Arch Masonry and derivations thereof. And it breaks down into Jar, which is supposed to be from Yahweh, Bull, which is supposed to be from Baal, and On, which is supposed to be from Osiris. I can remember reading a book on exposing the Freemasons about 40 years ago, and that was talking about this. So this has been known for quite some time that they worship this strange god. And I think I actually got this little bit here from Wikipedia, actually. So this is what Wikipedia have to say about it. They say, non-Masonic authors have alleged that it is a Masonic name for God, and even the name of a unique Masonic god, despite repeated statements by Freemasonry's officials that there is no separate Masonic god nor a separate proper name for a deity in any branch of Freemasonry. It is this interpretation of a Masonic god that has led to debates about and condemnation of Freemasonry by several religious groups. In England, no ritual containing the name has been in official Masonic use since February 1989. I just find that astonishing. You know, they're telling us that the Masons deny it, it doesn't exist, and then they say, well, we haven't used it since 1989 anyway. So they were obviously using it before then, weren't they? Just incredible. Well,
yeah. I mean, let's be honest, you know, it's not unheard of for a Mason to lie.
I just find it so funny that, you know, they're just basically admitting it there, that they stopped using it in 1989, basically. Blue Lodge Masons are taught that they are searching for the lost name of God, which is revealed as Jarbulon once they get to Royal Arch Masonry, 7th degree, York Rite. And the hidden hand part of it, that's a euphemism for the Illuminati and also for Jews, and like the hidden hand in history is what we're told about. But where's this idea that the name of God was lost? I mean, that comes to us from the Jews. It's not a Christian idea.
Well, it's a Jewish organization. Jewish tool,
You know, this is one of the ways that these Masons are deceived. The Blue Lodge Masons are taught, well, you're searching for the lost name of God. So they get them believing that God somehow lost his name. We've forgotten what his name is. He has to have a name. And then they reveal it as this composite word, which I think, you know, this composite word, I think even that is probably a distraction from what the actual truth is. But it's all just about diverting Christians from their faith in God and in Christ. That's all Masonry is about.
I think it's Pike who said that the first three levels of Freemasonry are meant to be, you know, used, and they don't really understand Freemasonry. They're led down another way. So obviously, you know, people all think Freemasons are okay, and, you know, so they themselves will stand up for Freemasonry when they're being used to cover in Pike's own words.
Well, and also this idea that God has a magic name, it's entirely Jewish. The Old Testament, it used the word Yahweh, and because the Jews complained about all of that, they got it changed in our translation so that it says Lord. Instead of saying Yahweh, it says Lord. And if you look at Flavius Josephus, he wrote about this, and he said that the word is Yahweh, and the closest pronunciation to it is Jove, which is a Roman patriarchal god, one of the fathers of the gods, is Jove. So it's not even pronounced in the way that the Jews say that it is. It's actually a word that's closer to an English word or a Roman word or a Latin word rather than a modern Hebrew word. And as I say, we've got this hidden hand here. That's the euphemism for Illuminati and the Jews. And Stalin's got his hand hidden in his jacket in this statue. And then your quotes say, Stalin is seen here captured on film doing the same sign, which is also known as the Master of the Second Veil. And that's actually what the Freemasons call it. And I've got a quote here, which tells us about this. Actually known as the Master of the Second Veil, but it is called the Hidden Hand of the Jabalon by researchers into this. C.C. Zane writes in his teaching course on ancient masonry, the Brotherhood of Light, quote, "The sign is made by thrusting the hand into the bosom and again drawing it out. The official Masonic explanation for this sign, a myth intended to divert the profane from the truth, is that it refers to the fourth chapter of Exodus in the Bible. And the fourth chapter of Exodus in the Bible, it says, And the Lord said unto Moses, Put now thine hand into thine bosom. And he put his hand into his bosom, and when he took it out, behold, his hand was leprous as snow." So this is their cover for it, basically. They're trying to give it a Christian gloss and say, well, this is a Christian thing. It's Moses putting his hand into his bosom. But I think what it basically is what it obviously looks like, the hidden hand. Symbolizing that whoever is doing that is a part of the hidden hand, this hidden hand that controls history and controls governments. And
I can't remember where I read it. Could have been the text marriage PDF, but it says that is a sign which is represented by, Israel eventually becoming the Jews' homeland. So anybody who did that sign was in favour of a Jewish homeland in Israel.
Well, I think they hide in plain sight as well, don't they? And a lot of these things that are, they're supposed to be hidden and Gnostic and what have you, they'll give you all these complicated explanations for them. And a lot of the time, it's basically the most simple one. And the complicated ones are to distract people. So, that's what it is, isn't it? It's the hidden hand. And that's exactly what they're doing.
Exactly what it is, yeah. We'll see what you get.
Yeah, revelation of the method is what Michael Hoffman called it. And getting back to the narration, or the subtitles here, that's what they are, aren't they? Subtitles that are in the video. There have been many people who have been photographed with their hand in the Masonic position, which does not always prove they were an actual Mason. However, I have never seen anyone immortalized in stone pretending to be one. And that's the really shocking thing about this, isn't it?
Yeah, it cuts through, doesn't it? I mean, I saw on the train where they signed the French surrender, I saw actually, I think it was Goering, who had his hand in his jacket. So he pointed out to me. Now, Freemasonry was obviously banned in Germany, like, but I mean, he was doing that sign, so people did accuse him. And you can understand that. But it doesn't always prove that you're a Mason.
Well, this is just it. I mean, that could just be a coincidence. Are there other pictures of him doing it? I'm not aware that there are.
Not like a fight of Stalin, no.
Yeah, I mean, there's quite a few of Stalin doing it, isn't there?
Yeah.
And he was quite regularly doing this hand sign. And, they don't make, he wouldn't have had a statue made unless he actually directed exactly how that statue was to be, how to be made and what it was supposed to be showing. So he wanted that to show that. But there are a lot of these leaders that do this. I mean, Napoleon, did he have an arm missing? Because I seem to remember he was always having his arm
Nelson,
like that.
Wasn't it?
Nelson, was it?
Yeah, Nelson had the arm missing, but Napoleon was always doing that. I mean, he slept in a pyramid, didn't he?
So Napoleon was always doing this one-arm.
Yeah, he was Freemason, yeah.
One-arm symbol. Let's just quick look in the chat. Nobody's mentioning it in there. Wondering if they can remember.
Because he set the Jews free, didn't he, in Europe as well?
Well, the leaders of the Western Allies were all high-ranking Freemasons, and by Freemasonry's own rules, no one without taking their secret oaths could ever sit down at one of their meetings. So you'd have to be a Mason, basically, to go to a meeting of Masons, which would take part in a lodge. So what you're implying here is when you had a meeting of all these Western allies, they were all high-ranking Freemasons. So logically, Stalin had to be one as well. Is that what you're saying here, Dennis?
Yeah, because they were talking war, talking secrets of war. And then certain times they were talking about how they were going to divide up Europe after the war. All these were Masonic 33 degree Masons who were, to look at anybody else who wasn't, it's just not fathomable. But I mean, they wouldn't have trusted anybody was the Mason. The reason is because they took the oath, and if you break that oath, as Morgan did in America once, he certainly suffered for it.
Yeah, these oaths they take very seriously. They know that people are punished in that way, that have their tongue torn out or whatever it is, and buried in the
ripped out,
buried in the sand beneath the tide mark, and all this weird stuff that they actually have. So they do take it very seriously. So if they want to be sure that somebody's going to be keeping a secret, they're going to want them to also be a Freemason. And I think that's probably why a lot of the intelligence agencies were really started by these secret societies and by the Jewish bankers, which we've gone into before. Yeah. And they still high up in Freemasonry, all the intelligence, MI6, MI5, because they take these oaths. Well, the Western Allied leadership were all Freemasons, and they were also puppets of the Masonic Rothschild bankers. The communist leaders in the East were also puppets of the Rothschild bankers after they had funded the Russian Revolution. Now, I guess most of our listeners are, you know, they're aware that these banks, they fund the wars, but just run over how the bankers were involved in the Bolshevik Revolution, Dennis.
Well, with the bankers and Bernard Brith on the outside working diligently, eventually hired Lenin and Trotsky to do the revolutionary work. But on the inside of Russia, they also had the Masons working hard there. And Kerensky, who was the leading Freemason of, I think it's the People's something of Russia. I can't remember the proper title now, but they actually, when Lenin arrived from Germany, people assumed that there was a civil war and then he got power, because they saw this attack on the palace, which they did the same with the Reichstag. They filmed the day after and reacted it. Well, it turns out that the attack on the palace didn't really happen. There was only a broken window, to say the least. And when we see this film, we've got those Bolsheviks storming through the gates and all this mayhem. What really happened was the Freemasons had already gotten rid of the Tsar, and they threatened his family, threatened his brother who once stood in for him to take over, and he immediately resigned because he weren't having none of these threats. And so when Lenin turns up, all Kerensky did was hand in the keys to the power. It was later that the Civil War started, and Kerensky went back to his lodge, and Lenin and Trotsky did what they did.
I think they had a million dollars or something as well, didn't they? That they were carrying with them from New York to Russia.
Which the bankers obviously funded them. But I mean, I think there was a case that I think it was 600 million rubles that was transferred over a couple of years out of Russia into the Lloyd Bank, which was the bank in New York for Jacob Schiff. So it was well worth the effort.
So you got links.
Anybody thinking that, you know, once Lenin and Trotsky took power, that the bankers didn't own Russia, and you know, unless a lightning strike of charity, would they ever in a million years hand it over to Lenin? They ran the Soviet Union.
Well, you got an unholy trinity here, haven't you? You got bankers, Jews, and Masons, all interlinked together, and some of them being all three, I should imagine, and they're basically sponsoring these revolutions. And we'll get into that a little bit more later on. But then you talk about how each of these famous persons can be identified as a Mason, and you got a long list here, and you start with Franklin D. Roosevelt, 33rd degree Freemason. How do you know that, Dennis?
Well, it's public knowledge, really. I mean, some people say it could have been 32. That's the only argument. But I think what he did with the building of the Pentagon, personally took over that building and put it in exactly the positions where he wanted to line up with the other Washington buildings, he pretty much must have been 33 degree. And that's no secret. You know, I mean, like, he was known to be a Freemason.
Yeah, I think it's not really a secret that America was founded really, by Freemasonic principles. And then it was after that Freemasonry really showed how subversive it was. I mean, up till that time, it had been like a light subversion. And after the French Revolution, it became a serious subversion. But as I say,
I think the Illuminati actually infiltrated the lodges, which overnight gave them access to nearly every country in the world.
But they wouldn't have been able to do that unless it was corrupt anyway, a corrupt organization.
Yeah, I mean, they agreed, I think. There were meetings in Germany where they agreed to blend.
Next, you got Winston Churchill, and of course, we've seen pictures. I think there's pictures of him, isn't there, in his Masonic apron?
And he's also a Druid, isn't he? Yeah.
And Harry Truman.
Yeah, Shriner, definitely 33 degree.
Clement Attlee.
Another one. He was sacked to replace Churchill, and he was a 33 degree.
And I would say all the British prime ministers probably were. I mean, all the aristocracy were, weren't they? We did a program a while back, didn't we? Exposed.
Well, Blair were, weren't they? I don't think they can get in there. I mean,
wasn't it the Guardian? It was the Guardian or the Independent, and they did a big thing on it, and they were saying, discovered how 80 years ago they were all Freemasons. Isn't that a surprise?
Yeah.
Exactly as the National Socialists were alleging. And you got Jacob Schiff.
That's right.
So how do we know for certain he was a Freemason?
Again, Rothschilds, I mean, I don't know if you remember when I did the article on the Boer War for the secret Masonic victory. There was a close clique of Freemasons around the Rothschilds. And so, consequently, they all have this belief of Lucifer. And so it's automatic that any bankers working for the Rothschilds would have been Freemasons.
Well, he was all three, wasn't he? He was a banker, he was a Jew, and he was a Freemason. So it was all three of them. And it was the banker Jacob Schiff who hired Lenin and Trotsky and who funded...
Yeah, I think it was...
Russian Revolution.
On Christianity, what's he called? Michael... was put on the Catholics. Can't think of his second name there, but he kind of established that Trotsky and Lenin had nothing in common with Schiff, the fact that they ate Christians because they're Jewish and the Masons. And so that's what linked them together, and that's why Schiff funded them.
Yeah, because the Bolsheviks, I mean, they were bank robbers, they were like nasty underground types. And then you've got like these upper class. Yeah, and you've got these upper class bankers that are sort of working with them. And on one of the pictures you show later on, you actually show that Stalin was a bank robber. He was known as a bank robber in the Urals. Well, and here he is working with the top banker, Jacob Schiff.
Exactly. So, I mean, he actually got sent to Siberia. To Stalin, he got sent there for 3 years. And then must have kept that memory with him, because every time somebody did what he didn't think was right, he sent them there for life.
Well, next you got Vladimir Lenin and Leon Trotsky, 33rd degree Freemason. I guess probably comes from the pictures that you've got later on, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Those ones. And let's not forget the man who Churchill replaced, Neville Chamberlain, 33rd degree Freemason. Chamberlain was quite good.
It surprised a lot of people, because you don't really think of Chamberlain as a Freemason. But again, he was the Prime Minister of England.
Yeah, they had to be, really, because they made the head of Freemasonry is always the Prince of England, isn't it? The monarch of England.
It's not the Queen.
It's her husband.
Because the Duke.
It? Yeah, the Duke. Isn't it the Duke? Her husband?
No, it's one of his brothers, I think.
Right, there always has to be some member of royalty is actually the head of the Freemasons, and I think they did that so that they didn't actually get banned by the monarchy. They said, all right, we'll make you the head of it. Which shows you that our monarchies are corrupt. I actually think our monarchies have been corrupt since Edward I. I'm doing a little series on Edward I in Real Britannia on Monday, and Merlin, the magician or the prophet, Arthur's Merlin, he came out with a load of prophecies, and the last king that he prophesied about that would be our last king was Edward I. And after that, the country would be headless and like a wasteland.
And
beginning to think that's what happened. Well, next you show a picture that lists Churchill, Truman, and Chamberlain, and it says that they are part of the Committee of 300. So what is the Committee of 300?
Yeah, again, this is exposed by a whistleblower. It was MI6, and he had a series of videos on YouTube, and he spoke of the Committee of 300 and said that every decision concerning world matters goes through 300, and I don't doubt it. I mean, the Queen is the head of the 300.
So it's like a sort of shadow group. We've got the Bilderberg group that we can see, yeah. And then you've got something like the Committee of 300, which is like a shadow version of it.
Yeah. There's different amounts of layers. I don't even believe that 33 degrees is the highest in Freemasonry. I believe there's a higher degree than that.
Yeah, that would make sense. There would be what we're allowed to see as the public, and then there's something behind that. And then I would suggest that as a public, there's something hidden that we're allowed to see as well, like this Committee of 300, that it's permitted for us to...
Yeah, the feeders, don't they? Little bits every now and again, like.
Well, next, the subtitles say, there are some who say that Stalin was able to meet with FDR and Churchill because he had the largest army in the world. However, it was bankers that had placed him there, and they would never allow anyone to hold such a position who had not taken the oath of secrecy. And this is...
That makes sense as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, this is what you were mentioning earlier with the tried and tested Masonic oath would be the strongest oath that anyone could really take. And especially when you think they had done away with oaths to obey God and to obey Christianity and to obey the Bible. They did away with that to become a member of Parliament in 1800 and something. So by this time, you've got the promotion of atheism and people taking an oath to obey God. If they've stopped believing in God, there's no point in them taking that oath. But an oath...
Well, they're the same in America. They've stopped the prayers, the classrooms. So it's obviously an agenda.
Well, we'll find out where that comes from in a minute. But you say this was taken from a website called midnightfreemasons.org. Well, hang on, the next bit is taken from a website called midnightfreemasons.org, where Master Freemasons would answer any question. So just before we talk about the question, Dennis, is that website still up?
I found it just the other day.
Was it you that asked this question?
No, somebody had asked it before.
And what there was a record of it on the website, was it?
Yeah, it's still there now, yeah.
So they've got sort of questions up there and answers
And then they've got people commenting underneath, while they're commenting on it.
Well, and obviously they're only going to say what the cover story is for things, aren't they? And they're going to try and avoid anything that could put them in a precarious position. So,
well, it's mainly for people who don't really understand Freemasonry, because the answer they give is a fob off, but it wouldn't work with 99% of people.
Well, it's a cover story. That's just there as a cover story. We're open. There's nothing hidden about us. Just ask us a question, and we'll answer. And we'll see from this question and answer that it's a distraction, it's a cover story. The question is, was Stalin a Freemason? And the answer they gave is, it would not have been possible for Stalin to join a regular lodge, even if he had desired admission. As a condition for membership, Masons must profess a belief in a supreme being, and Joseph Stalin was an avowed atheist. So most people think, well, yeah, that's logical. Have to believe in a god. And you say they lied. Vladimir Lenin and Leon Trotsky were both atheists, as was Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels. The Grand Orient Lodge allows an atheist to become a Freemason. But are they lying? Because if you look up the Grand Orient Lodge, it's not considered a regular lodge.
It's just a twist in it, yeah.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean by their weaselly words. They said it wouldn't have been possible for him to join a regular lodge. But there are irregular lodges, and this Grand Orient Lodge is the biggest one of the irregular ones. The Grand Orient de France, and this is actually from Wikipedia, so this isn't conspiracy theories. This isn't conspiracy theories. This is this is what's out there for the public. The Grand Orient de France, the GODF, is the largest of several Masonic organizations in France and is the oldest in continental Europe and is generally considered to be the mother lodge of traditional liberal or continental Freemasonry. So you've got liberal Freemasonry.
Yeah.
Where did all this liberal ideology come from? All this liberated mentality. The Catholic Encyclopedia alleges that the Masonic book La Franc Masonnerie Irakazi in 1746 predicted the program of the French Revolution and claims to quote documents of the Grand Orient of France where Freemasonry claims credit for the French Revolution. However, the New Catholic Encyclopedia of 1967 says that modern historians see Freemasonry's role in the French Revolution as exaggerated. I mean, doesn't that just say it all, doesn't it? The New Encyclopedia of 1967, post-Vatican II, after the war, says the total opposite of what it was saying for the 200 years previously before that.
Correct.
Yes. Some notable French revolutionaries were Freemasons, including Marquis de Lafayette, Marquis de Condorcet, Mirabeau, Georges Danton, the Duke of Orleans, and Hébert. And I'm not really a student of the French Revolution, but they're probably famous French revolutionaries. According to the Marxist author Ernest Belfour Bax, Freemasons had a considerable involvement in the Paris Commune after a couple of unsuccessful attempts at reconciling the commune with the French government. And that's where we get the word communist from.
Exactly.
From the Paris Commune. So what you're saying is that Stalin was a member of this group, as well as Vladimir Lenin and Leon Trotsky. And what we're finding out here...
Well, that's his way in, yeah. You know, the Grand Orient Lodge, which obviously they kind of rebuffed. But Trotsky's the other colleague.
Yeah, well, and this is where we find out that it's actually this lodge that was starting up the French Revolution and starting up communism with his Paris Commune and
the
liberalism.
Same lodge, by the way, you know, in that, I think one of the episodes in the Secret Masonic Picture where it said the attack on the Catholic Church, the guy who they wouldn't reveal the name of was in that meeting at the Grand Lodge, Grand Orient Lodge in France. So they're obviously planning and plotting in that place.
Oh, they were big enemies of the Catholic Church. Mm. And you think, and libertarian is the word I was trying to think of a minute ago when I was saying that the traditional liberal Freemasonry is obviously where libertarianism comes from.
Yeah.
In 1877, at the instigation of the Protestant pastor, Frederick Damon, it allowed those who had no belief in a supreme being to be admitted. It was this decision that has been the root cause of the schism between the Grand Orient and those lodges that followed it, and the rest of Freemasonry.
Imagine so don't you think their Master Masons were a norm?
Sorry?
So don't you think their Master Masons answering the question were a norm?
Oh, yeah. They've been careful, weren't they? That's why they said it's not a regular lodge.
Well, yeah.
So they've had this schism. But interesting, it was a Protestant pastor that said we need to allow people who are atheists.
Yeah.
Does it so much for Protestantism, does it?
Well, they're involved in the Vatican too as well, weren't they? So what's Protestants got to do with that? But they're involved.
The Grand Orient was instrumental in the founding of the left-wing Republican Party. That's in America. And it advanced the concept of laïcité, a French concept of the separation of church and state and the absence of religious interference in government affairs. In the 1930s, the Grand Orient was still hostile to church interests, wishing to close private schools, which were predominantly Catholic, or failing that, to reintroduce an insistence that only state schools could provide civil servants. And what they mean there is only Masonic civil servants that have been taught in the Masonic schools, not people that have been given a good Christian education. The GODF practices continental-style Freemasonry, known to its practitioners as liberal Masonry, the defining features of which are complete freedom of religious conscience and deliberate involvement in politics. This is antithetical to the Anglo-American tradition of Freemasonry, which remains male-only and requires a belief in the deity, but which otherwise bans discussion of both religion and politics. Interesting there, because... I mean, it's all Masonry that, where it's a secret society, it fosters these conspiracies and attempts to take over governments. I mean, even the British Masonry was sowing the seeds of the French Revolution in France, trying to get that going in France to destabilise France.
Yeah.
Just as part of geopolitics. I mean, Michael Jones does that.
Well, you see, in World War One, the countries involved: Britain, Mussolini, France, Mussolini, America, Mussolini. Same in World War Two.
Yeah, they basically took over all the governments, so they're working for a secret government, working for the hidden hand.
Exactly. That's why in The Race So Never Told, I showed the British Empire compared to the rest of, they're all claiming Germany wanted to conquer the world. I showed the French Empire, and I showed the English Empire, which was practically nearly two-thirds of the world then. I was wrong, because I should have included all America and Soviet Union as well, because they're all under one umbrella. So they practically ruled the world then.
So they didn't need the British Empire anymore.
No, because they took over America or Russia. They could use either. And they did.
Rather than believe in a supreme deity, it has guiding principles: democracy, separation of church from state, liberty, equality, and fraternity, promoted through respect, tolerance, and freedom of conscience and human rights. And the GODF supports gay marriage. I mean, it's no different to the UN and the EU.
Exactly the same.
I mean, this is where all these ideas for human rights came from. It all came from this Masonic lodge, basically. Grand Orient Lodge. And, of course, that's where Lenin, Trotsky, and Stalin, that's
exactly
where they were inducted into Masonry, was in this lodge. That's the link, basically.
Yeah.
Then you show a photograph with Marx, Engels, and Lenin, and it identifies them as being members of the Grand Orient Lodge. And I was wondering, where are these pictures taken from?
Well, they come from a website, but the actual pictures were used in a lecture, which I'd watched on YouTube a while back. So I took screenshots of the screen of the lecture. But the website's up there, but I think the website's not available there, which, again, is not a surprise.
Was it something to do with Tex Mars?
No, it wasn't Tex Mars. It was, I can't remember his name now, but he's got a lot of material on there. I used him for the UN at one point. I think he's German, I think.
He's not the guy from the Crow House or something like that?
No.
I can't think of the names. It's so long since I've looked into the conspiracy theory stuff to do with this. It was years back. But some of it's from Tex Mars, isn't it? The Codex Magica or something like that?
Yeah, he did a great book, yeah.
Yeah, some of the information's from there. Well, you show pictures showing Vladimir Lenin, the Jewish Mason who led the communist overthrow of the Tsar in Russia, giving the hidden sign of the men who worship the god Jabulon. So you got Lenin making this same sign. Lenin and his cohorts established the Red Terror, the brutal massacre of tens of millions of Christians. And then you show Trotsky, and you show that Trotsky is also a member of this Grand Orient Lodge. And I'll just stop there and say, just remember, this Grand Orient Lodge, this was linked up with the Paris Commune, the start of communism, and now you've got these prominent communists that are overthrowing the Tsar in Russia and setting off this revolution, and they're also members of this Grand Orient Lodge. That's the connection with it all.
Yeah, and communism. Also, Spanish Revolution.
And French Revolution. All these revolutions.
Yeah. Well, the guy, the 13 degree guy from America just wouldn't discuss it at all, just refused point blank, which is probably why in America, like, they don't involve politics, as you just said.
Yeah, and they claim that they have this schism with this Grand Orient Lodge, but how can you say that they have a schism with it when the Republican Party supports all of those ideals: separation of church and state, liberty, fraternity, la di da di da, and the Grand Orient Lodge is the one that started the Republican Party. And yet, America was founded on the Anglo-American masonry, and they supposedly had a schism with this lodge, and yet the Republican Party was started by this lodge. So that shows that, they're not enemies, are they? They're supporting the same agenda you get from both of them.
Well, all secret societies have. In some cases, some people, I think they said on this website, again, one of the questions was George Bush a Mason? And they said no. But it's the Secret Society Skull and Bones, which is really another branch of Freemasonry. But like you said, they twist things.
Yeah, they might have slightly different rituals, but they've all got the same goals. They've all got secret oaths. It's all about being members of secret orders that have secret meetings deciding
Christianity.
Yeah, and how they're going to direct society, and how they have got more knowledge than everybody else. And it all
I was just going to say another prime example was Saddam Hussein. Now, Saddam Hussein was also a 33-degree Mason. That's a fact, but he would have had to be, as I'm saying about Stalin, because he was installed by the British at one point, or maybe the Americans, either one. But when he turned, you know, he got crushed. It didn't matter if they were a Freemason or not. He was crushed.
I wonder if Gaddafi was.
He was.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, Gaddafi and Saddam Hussein, they were both installed by the intelligence agencies of the West.
There's no way they're going to install it on Mason.
And then they turn against it. Well, your next picture shows Stalin, and he's listed as being a member of the Illuminati and the Grand Orient Lodge.
Yeah.
So where do we get the link that he's a member of the Illuminati from?
Well, he's just listed on that particular website, but later on, it's also thought that he was a Rosicrucian, which was the John Dee secret society that he brought up to fight the Jesuits.
Yeah, interesting that one, because the Rosicrucians were on the continent as well, weren't they? They weren't just in Britain.
Yes, they were going today. It's a secret society, yeah.
Yeah, Rosicrucian, Rosy Cross was their symbol, mm-hmm. and alchemy. I used to read loads of books about this stuff about 10 years ago.
Yeah. So it's all fascinating to me. Yeah, it really is.
Not too brushed up on it at the moment. Then you say also from the ranker.com famous Freemasons list.
Yeah.
And there's a picture that shows Stalin is listed as a famous Freemason.
So I just thought I'd get two sources. You know.
So that,
I'm sure he's listed on others.
That ranker.com, is that just a website called that, or is it famous?
Yeah, it's available now. Yeah, you can go there now. It'll show Stalin.
So it's just, and they have lists on there, do they? Is it an
exposing? Freemasons, yeah. That's the old thing.
Is it exposing Freemasons website, or is it a Freemason website? Right, okay. So they're admitting it, basically, aren't they?
Yeah.
And then your subtitles come up again. Stalin was also said to be a Rosicrucian, a secret organization which John Dee, the occultist for Queen Elizabeth I, had formed in order to oppose the Roman Catholic Jesuits. And then you've got a picture that shows him listed as a Rosicrucian sat with Lenin. It'd be interesting to, I guess we don't have enough close-up pictures, but you know, you'd want to see what sort of ring, if he had any rings, and what was on his rings.
Because some people say Obama's not a Freemason, but he's been pictured with a Freemason ring. And he has to be, really. You know, again, it's the same principle.
Well, I think in America, I mean, Freemasonry is very, very big. And if you wanted to get anywhere in business, then you had to join it. And once the blacks were freed from slavery, they set up their own lodges, and they loved all of this stuff. They really enjoyed it, the dressing up and the secret society thing. And, you know, the more upper class blacks were all taking part in this Freemasonry.
Yeah, Jesse Jackson is an old Freemason. Yeah.
And this picture is quite interesting. It also identifies Stalin as a bank robber and says he was known as the Jesse James of the Urals.
Of the Urals, yeah.
And that was a big accusation of the National Socialists, was that the Bolsheviks, the leadership,
were
thugs and bank robbers, and it listed these crimes that they were all guilty of, and now they were running the whole of Russia. Running a country.
They wouldn't just say they killed you, wouldn't it? They just. To nail somebody's intestines to a tree and tell him to run around the tree, it's just, you know.
It's an insult to gangsters, isn't it? Really? When you look at what the Bolsheviks did, absolute savages, gangland savages that were sitting in the Duma and running the whole of Russia that they took over. It was such a crime against humanity to be allowed to happen.
And then, this was the big fear, obviously, in Europe, because, you know, once he started trying to expand, I mean, the church knew the danger it was in, you know what I mean, where to do, because Stalin destroyed the Catholic Church completely in the Soviet Union, never mind the Orthodox Church.
Yeah, and again, we find out that this lodge, this Grand Orient Lodge, its main enemy was Catholicism and the church.
Yeah.
And separating the church. They call it separating church from state, but it was basically just taking everything off the church.
Which is interesting because Germany, Hitler obviously closed these occult lodges, and there was a financing of the church. There was a church and state. So when you look at Britain and America, who were accusing Hitler of all these things against the church, when it was actually increasing the financing every year of the churches.
Yeah, he was looking after them whilst Stalin was destroying them and turning them into cinemas and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
Next, we'll get back to the subtitles again, and you say, "I was once told that Stalin could not be a Freemason because he had purged the Freemasons in the 1920s. Whilst that was true, I came across
the guy who told me that was Jerry Leary. I sent him an email.
Right, so anything else that he told you when you were in communication with him?
No, I just asked him, you know, was Stalin a Freemason? He came back and he explained, no, he couldn't have been a Freemason because he actually purged Freemasons, which was true, you know, but like I said, yeah.
Anyone who hasn't seen Jura Lena's documentary really should see it. Was it Under the Sign of Hermes or Under the Sign of the Scorpion?
Scorpion, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, well worth watching. And you say, whilst that was true... and that is that Stalin had purged the Freemasons, I came across this information researching for the documentary NWO Communism by the Back Door. Was Stalin a Freemason? Some say Stalin was not a Freemason on the basis that he purged Freemasonry. However, in Russia, 1929, only Masons who were not Jewish were killed, along with their family, according to Alexei Zhevimov. From his book, Who Are the Rulers of Russia, page 77. And I looked the book up, and it's unavailable in PDF format. It was written before 1950. And it's hard to find copies of it. There was another book that you mentioned as well that looks pretty interesting. And then you say, others say Stalin was a member of the Rosicrucian Lodge, or like Trotsky, he was a member of the Grand Orient Lodge, which requires no belief in a supreme being. Certainly Stalin liked to pose as a Freemason. The question is, did Stalin, as a dictator who ruled with an iron fist, have to pretend at being anything? Exactly.
Yeah.
He could be whatever he wanted. And
I would have thought so.
this idea that he only killed the Masons who were not Jewish, I mean, that would be interesting to find out more information on that, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think it had something to do with some of the Jewish ones were ones where he came from America and we told to leave them alone.
Right. Unless,
you know.
Right, well, they might have had relatives with them. Jews that were in America. Next, was Stalin...
Well, you know, in the revolution takedown, somewhere involved.
Next, you say, was Stalin Jewish? Joseph Stalin, Zhugashvili, was half-Jewish, according to Russian researcher Gregor Klimov, and he was born September 26, 1918, and he died December the 10th, 2007, and I looked him up as well, and he actually had written three books, two in Russian, one in English. The one in English was called The Terror Machine, The Inside Story of the Soviet Administration in Germany. And as I was looking it up on the website that was telling about these books, and it had tags there, and it had white supremacist, neo-Nazi, racist. The picture's like of an old guy. He was born in 1918 and he obviously lived through this. He lived through the Red Terror. He's calling it the Terror Machine, the inside story of the Soviet administration in Germany. And they're writing him off, you know, they're just insulting the guy.
Yeah.
For what he's saying. Again, I would like to read what he wrote, but it's not available. You can't find it on a PDF.
Can I just say, like, in the French Revolution, the Illuminati, Weishaupt, he had the Red Terror going there. That was the original Red Terror. They called it the Insinuating Brethren, which did exactly the same as what they did in Russia and also in Libya. Because when Libya was taken down, there was a terror then. And one of the people were explaining in one of the videos they did that they used to leave the daughters head in a fridge for the parents to come home after they'd been raped, which was enough to keep people quiet.
Well, I think the original Red Terror was back in Jerusalem when the Romans were surrounded it, and the Edomites and the Pharisees, and they went and terrorized the population before they burnt down the temple. If you read the descriptions of what actually went on there, it was horrific.
I can't believe it.
And that was really the start of it, where they had this.
It is real terror, though, isn't it? I mean, imagine coming onto a fridge with your daughter's head in it.
Oh, it's just horrific. And then they project those sort of things onto the Germans and blame Germans for the Holocaust. There's that book, isn't it? Holocaust manufactured in Soviet Russia or something?
Yeah, well, I saw an article, I think it was in the Daily Mail, you know, this week, where they said, it's an old article, but what it said were that the Germans rebels in bombing children and bombing civilians. They had these airmen what were kept in Britain for interrogation, but they left microphones in the walls, apparently, and picked up on the private conversations. And there were some real hideous pieces of journalism there, really was.
All prediction. Then you say, the Jew David Weissman claims he was wholly Jewish in the B'nai B'rith Messenger, March 3rd, 1950. So you've actually got the Jews boasting there that Stalin is Jewish. You say, Stalin could speak Yiddish. This was revealed during a meeting between Stalin and the Jewish poets Abraham Sutskever and Shlomo Mikols, Commissary of Propaganda. Sutskever discussed problems of Yiddish culture with which Stalin was familiar. The fact that Stalin understood Yiddish was one of the Soviet Union's most jealously guarded secrets. And Yiddish was, I think that was spoken by a lot of them at first.
When they first took over the Soviet Union, they tried to get the whole nation to speak Yiddish.
Right, there we go. Stalin allowed no anti-Semitism at the beginning. That's at the beginning of the Bolshevik Revolution when he was in charge. He had an article about the most efficient ways to combat anti-Semitism published in Pravda number 41 in February 1929. He proclaimed on January the 1st, 1931, that the communists resolutely condemn anti-Semitism and that in the Soviet Union, anti-Semitism is punished in the most severe manner. And we know that it was actually a capital crime. You could be executed. For it. However, he would later purge the Jews, and in turn, they would be suspected of poisoning him. Now this is the common narrative, is that he turned on the Jews, he became an anti-Semite, but there's a book that was written by Colin Jordan called Fraudulent Conversion in 1953, and he shows that what actually happened was he got rid of some Jews and kept others. And when the book was written in 1953, there were still 350,000 Soviet Jews that were still in prominent public positions.
Yeah.
And that's a quote from the Scotsman that was written at the time. So it was really a power grab. It was one lot of Jews getting rid of another lot of Jews rather than Stalin becoming anti-Semitic. And then you show another picture of him in his uniform in a Masonic pose. Another one of him in his Masonic pose again. And then you say, to advance to the highest level in an important career with influence or power, such as the army, the police, the judiciary, in politics, the film industry, the music industry, the clergy, even royalty, you have to be a member of the Brotherhood. So by their own rules, Stalin had to be a Freemason. And then you show once again the picture of Stalin immortalized in stone, making the hidden hand of Jabulon. Then you say, for more information, watch the secret Masonic victory of World War II. And you close with a picture of Stalin, Lenin and Trotsky with a Freemason quote.
Quite sarcastic.
We make good men better. And that's really interesting. Why do good men don't need to be made better?
No, but it's a famous Freemason quote, isn't it? And when you look at them three...
Well, good is good enough, Dennis. Well, it says right at the beginning of the Bible, God created the world. This is before there was anything like that, and God saw that it was good. Yeah. It didn't need to be made better. It was this idea that good men could be made better that turned the world into what it is today. And to see that as that's the Freemasonic quote, I mean, that should really tip people off that they're no good. Good men don't need to be made better at all. They are already good. and good is, you know, that's, it comes from the word God, doesn't it?
Well, the thing is, I think there's enough evidence now for people to realise what Freemasonry is, and whether they want to believe it or not, it's up to them. But there's certainly enough for a Christian to think twice.
Well, I think that statue really says it all, doesn't it?
That was a poignant part of the old video, yeah.
Immortalised in stone like that. Well, we've conveniently come to the end of the podcast, Dennis.
That's one, yeah.
Thank you very much for coming on today.
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We will be back next Friday with more Truthful Out Radio for you. And, of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you, even though you are still in quarantine.